Chapter 31. The next morning, Charlie woke up bright and happy. She went over the previous day like a dream, tracking each moment. The muddy truck, the donuts, Cuba. She plunked down the stairs like it was Christmas morning, ate some Fig Newtons, and ran back to her room to get dressed. She could barely contain the news that her father had come back to be with her. And while she was acutely aware that Pecan Hollow was not ready for this twist, she was anxious to talk about it with somebody other than Kit. Although she had never said a word to Dirk before 2 weeks ago, he was the first and only person she wanted to tell. She got a little light in the middle, thinking of their time by the lake, a crackling joint between them. She left another, more detailed note for Kit. Out. Dinner. Don't worry. /CH. She pedaled her bike as fast as she could into town. It would be too obvious of her to go poking around the trailers, but she was hoping he'd show up at the diner, or near it, soon enough. With the breakfast rush done by 9, the place was nearly empty save for the cook, who was scraping and greasing the griddle in back, and Sandy, who was rolling place settings for the lunch crowd. Charlie became aware that in reuniting with her father, she had suddenly changed status. This ranking system was all but explicit in Pecan Hollow. At the top were the girls from intact homes. Then there were the ones from divorced homes. Lower still, the offspring of unmarried parents who stayed together. Then, girls from single mom homes where the father had run off. Then, at the bottom, were the ones like Charlie, where the father had never been known at all. Sandy, with her loose ways and tragic mother, was often referenced in hushed tones as what could become of fatherless girls.
Hey, Sandy, you seen Dirk around here?
Sandy blushed like she'd been caught doing something wicked.
Dirk Durkin? Huh.
She put her hand on her hip.
No, babe, don't think I have. Why, you two have a rendezvous?
Sandy got busy making a peanut butter malt without being asked. She wiped the melting drip of malt from the side of the heavy glass, squirted a pile of whipped cream on top, and finished it with a straw.
This one's on the house.
Charlie thanked her and sipped it, sweet and frothy, her agenda briefly halted by the treat.
I had a feeling there was a love connection between you two, Sandy said, spidering her fingers across the counter toward Charlie.
Charlie recoiled.
Oh, don't be shy. It's fun to be in love. I do it all the time.
Don't be weird, man. We're just friends,
Charlie said, aware that even in the act of resisting the accusation, she was confirming it. Charlie tried to think where else she could wait around for Dirk to show up without getting interrogated by Sandy, but it was hot out and the malt was damn good.
You're getting so grown up. You know, I used to change your diapers, Sandy said, like she was bragging.
Charlie gave a begrudging,
"You don't say." Sure did. You know, I probably changed more than your mama did.
Sandy deftly rolled a fork, knife, and spoon in a paper napkin.
She didn't bother herself much.
Charlie was irritated at being reminded, by Sandy of all people, of her mother's shortcomings.
Yeah, well, we all know she's not the motherly type, I guess. It wasn't her fault, bless her heart. She just didn't know about those things.
Something about Sandy's tone made Charlie stop drinking and push the glass away. She dug in her pocket to pay. On the house or not, she didn't want to owe Sandy for shit.
Guess you must be pretty pissed at her, Sandy said slyly.
Charlie tossed $3 on the counter.
Sandy Blanchett,
Are you deliberately trying to get under my skin?
Sandy returned to her napkin rolling, carrying some secret like a banner.
For what she did to your dad and all?
Charlie stood up, confused anger sweeping over her, breaking across her skin like hives.
You know, I have a 500,000 nasty things I could say to you, but won't because it ain't worth it. But I'm not going to stand here and listen to you manufacture gossip because you've got nothing better to do than swing your braid and moon over anything with a pecker.
Sandy pantomimed, zipping her lips.
Jeez, forget I said anything, she said. It's just, if I were you, I'd want to know.
Charlie pivoted to face the door, but didn't advance. She realized not knowing would be worse.
I don't have a dad, and you know that as well as I do, Charlie said.
Sandy gave her a pitying sort of look.
Listen, Charlie, I know, okay? About Manny.
How the hell?
Charlie started. Something collapsed in her middle. She felt like the news about her father had been cheapened by Sandy knowing too.
All right, Charlie said without turning. I'll bite. What all did she do to my so-called dad, allegedly?
Sandy leaned forward, seemingly delighted to bear the news.
She went and kidnapped you from him,
she said and pursed her sliver-thin lips in smug triumph. Charlie laughed, a horn blown, to show that she wouldn't fall so easily for such drivel. It was just like Sandy to insert herself in the middle of a juicy drama. What irked her almost as much as the possibility that the news was true was the hungry smile on Sandy's face when she was telling it. And yet, a germ of doubt took hold at the base of Charlie's gut.
And where are you getting this from? You've been smoking some of your mama's crack.
She winced at the ugliness of her own words. She felt even worse when Sandy brushed off the insult like she'd heard it 1,000 times before.
Honest to God,
Sandy said, hand raised like a pledge.
Manny told me. He didn't want you to know. He didn't want to turn you against your mama. But he told me the whole story. It's a crying shame. Says they were young and hungry, and she ripped off a gas station or something. And when she came back with the money, he wouldn't have it. Says he ripped the bag out of her hands and marched that money inside to give it right back to the people what she stole it from. But by then, the police had put him in cuffs and your mama had up and gone, took his car and his baby, and disappeared into thin air.
Sandy flushed and panted with the thrill of it and pulled the braid off her neck, swirled it into a bun, and let it fall back down.
Manny didn't want to shame her around town, so he's never told anyone else the true story. But he told it to me, and I thought you should hear it too.
Charlie held Sandy's gaze as the story sped past her, the questions flying up before her like startled birds. What was Sandy doing talking to Manny? Why was Sandy the first to know that Manny was her father? Could her mother really have done those awful things? Her head felt like it was splitting with the pressure of all these revelations. For now, she had to get the fuck out of this diner. She spat on the floor at Sandy's feet and walked a straight line out the door. Charlie kept her eyes pinned to the ground in front of her, tears making swirls of the pavement. Though she intended to keep walking until her mind cleared up, she hadn't picked a direction and found herself marching a wide loop around the cluster of buildings at the town's center. As she completed the circle around the back of the diner, she got the feeling she was being watched. Then there was the sound of comments under breath, snickering. She knew before she turned toward the sound that someone was making fun of her. There was a three-man huddle by a stack of milk crates. One had hog pink skin, reddish hair that stuck to his forehead, and reddish fuzz over his lip. Another was skinny and so hunched he was C-shaped, as if he were draped over a barrel. He wore a knit cap pulled over his ears, though it was hot and humid as an armpit, and drank a tall boy from a paper bag. The third man had his back to her, but she could tell from the fatty hips and his butcher's hands that it was Dirk. Dirk, who she'd been looking for, who she'd sought out to share the unimaginable news of her father, who she hoped could help her feel better about Sandy's ugly rumor. Charlie had so hoped to see Dirk that she did not immediately jump to the conclusion that he was making fun of her. Maybe they hadn't seen her. Maybe they were yucking about something else. She stuck out her hand and waved.
"Hi, you,"
she said loudly enough to cut through the sounds of their mumbling.
"I was just thinking about you."
"I was just thinking about you?" She could have punched herself for how desperate that sounded. And when Dirk looked over his shoulder and raised his eyebrows without saying anything back, she could have punched him, too. The guy in the cap whistled a lewd sound. The redhead was looking at her with a snaggle-toothed grin. Dirk's eyes were on his feet. It stank back here. A fishy smell of old fry oil and garbage juice that dripped from the cracks in the dumpster. Nothing good was going on.
"What's your damage, dude?"
she said.
"Too cool to say hello?"
"What's up, Walker?"
he said, still not meeting her eyes. He was shifty as hell. Was he high? She had never seen these creeps before. Definitely not from town. Dirk took a swig of beer, crumpled the can in his fist, and tossed it in the dumpster. The redhead pulled another tall boy from a backpack that was slumped against the milk crates, cracked it open, took a long, foamy slurp, and handed it to Dirk.
"So are these your fucking dealers, or you just giving out blowjobs?"
she said, pissed. Dirk shook his head and rolled his eyes. The C-shaped guy took it personally and puffed out his chest.
"What you fucking say, bitch?"
he said. He talked like he was street, but he didn't look that tough. The redhead bit his lip and cocked his head.
"What do you know about giving head, little mama?"
"I know your mom gives it up for free," she said.
The two guys stepped toward her. She was ready to run or fight. Dirk looked uneasy. He pushed the guys back and left the circle, taking Charlie by the arm. He led her around the corner of the diner.
"Look,"
he said. He glanced left and right like he was making sure no one was listening.
"I had fun with you the other night, okay? But we can't hang out anymore."
"Why not?"
she said, already feeling like she could cry, willing herself not to.
"Do you seriously not know?"
he said. He scratched his blonde hair sideways.
"Your mom busted in my trailer like a goddamn hurricane looking for you the other night. Mama said she looked ready to kill somebody. Pretty sure that somebody was me."
"She fucking what?"
Charlie snapped. She didn't need another reason to be mortified by her mom.
"Yeah, she was acting like I was gonna deflower you or something. And maybe I've been guilty of that in the past," he said. "But we both know I didn't lay a hand on you."
She blushed so hard she wanted to pull the neck of her shirt over her face. He'd seen it for sure, because he seemed less angry at her.
"Screw her," Charlie said. "Why should she stop us?"
"I'm sorry, man," he said. "You keep your crazy. I've got enough of my own."
She didn't know what to say, and all of this was making her miserable. She was getting the feeling this might be the last time she talked to Dirk.
Why didn't you then? She asked.
Why didn't I what?
Dirk said, all perplexed. And again, she had the urge to punch him.
Kiss me, you idiot. Why didn't you make a move? My breath smell like dog shit or something?
Dirk shook his head and took a step back toward his goober friends.
You're just a kid, Walker, he said. Go home.
Charlie wanted to say something cruel to him, but she was out of juice. The thing she had with Dirk had been so fleeting, she never really got a hold on it. He'd wandered by and slipped through her fingers. Yet she felt such loss. Maybe she had hoped for too much too soon. The strikes against her mom kept piling up, and her disappointment was turning into hatred. Just when Charlie was on the verge of feeling like a half-normal teenager, her mom went and blasted it to bits. The fact that Dirk had been such an asshole to her was the shit icing on a garbage cake. She hadn't even gotten a chance to kiss him, she thought bitterly. Though she knew the real loss was that feeling she'd come here with. The lift in her heart when she thought about jumping in his truck, driving off somewhere, and forgetting how much she hated her life. Chapter 32. Kit churned over the evening with Manny as she drove a shipment of supplies from the post office to Doc's place. Ever since she'd told Charlie about Manny, it was like she had dropped the weight of an unbearable load, but now its contents were scattered asunder. Though the secret had plagued her, she'd enjoyed the protection of control. She wondered what Manny had told Charlie, how he had cast their relationship. Would he know to protect their daughter from the whole truth? Would he reveal things just to spite her? Still, there was, in the telling, a restoration of Charlie's dignity, the dignity of knowing where she came from. There was humanity in knowing. Kit had not been granted the same, and because of it, she might never feel whole. What scraps she had been given, she had clung to. The note, her mother's name, the few stories of cattlemen and dancers and hurricanes. But they were only scraps. Charlie could have more. She felt for Charlie, wished she could see inside and know what her daughter's heart was doing. Kit couldn't help but worry that the knowledge of her father would drive Charlie further away from her. Would Charlie feel cheated? Would she hate Kit for leaving a hole where her father had been? She had envied how sweetly Charlie had smiled up at him. Kit knew better than anyone how alluring Manny could be. With a sickening twinge, she considered that he might want Charlie all to himself, that she might want to go with him. She was approaching Doc's when a possum family crossed the road. A fat mama with three miniatures clinging to her back. To avoid hitting them, Kit turned wide into the shallow end of a ditch. The back of her truck clipped a culvert and dislodged something, which now dragged behind her, making an awful racket. She cursed, slowed and stopped, but in truth was glad to have a diversion. Whatever had happened to the truck, she was sure she could fix it. She walked around and clawed through the odds and ends in the bed of the truck. Rubber boots, a poncho, a shovel. She opened a cooler and found a couple of short bungee cords that just might work. Kit got on her back and wriggled under the truck. The muffler and tailpipe were almost completely disconnected from the body, all but one bracket having been destroyed. She started to dismantle the rig, but remembered to put on gloves so her fingers wouldn't blister. When she shimmied back out from under the shade of the truck,
She startled to see Manny standing there. "God damn it," she said. Manny laughed.
"Whoa there, easy girl. I just got here, I swear."
He helped her up.
"Can you use a hand?"
Kit shook her head. Manny was wearing his old jeans and a tissue-thin Western shirt. He looked so much like his old self that she half expected to see the Mustang parked nearby. "What are you doing here?" she asked.
"I was headed back to church from the vet. Dropped off Joe Beth's little dropkick dog for some shots and stuff."
"Yeah, I heard you've been do-gooding all over town," she said. "Hang on, I just gotta strap this thing down." She didn't like that he had been by Doc's. It seemed he was working his way into every corner of her life. She lay back on the ground, shifting sideways under the truck, and snaked the bungees around the exhaust pipe and through what remained of the brackets. She just needed a quick fix to get her to Doc's and back home and could weld everything into place at the house.
"What did you do to your leg?" he said.
She looked down and squinted. The heat and the movement had caused the scabbed over gash on her shin to split open again, and blood was soaking through her jeans.
"It's nothing, just a cut."
Her voice was a cramped echo off the undercarriage. Without asking, he gently pulled the cuff up over her shin. She let him look. He pressed on the center of the gash.
"What are you doing?" she asked, bothered by his touch.
"I'll never get over that," he said, rubbing the jam of her blood between his fingers. "It's such a blessing."
"It's a damn curse," she said. "It keeps me from knowing when to stop getting hurt."
She secured the last section of the bungee and tugged the muffler to see if it would hold.
"That'll do it."
Before she could get out herself, Manny took her by the boots and dragged her from under the truck, the gravel scratching her back and collecting under her shirt. He took her beneath the arms and lifted her up to stand, batted away the dust and the grit. She felt immobilized, like a pup taken by the scruff of its neck. He searched her face, then moved closer, a hair's breadth between them. She felt an old, familiar wanting, a heady flush fanning across her cheeks and down her chest, a weakness in the muscles of her legs. The smell of his sweat and shampoo and a candied fragrance she recognized but couldn't place. She could feel Manny wanting her, too, in the way he stood so still as if waiting for a shy bird to light. A black car approached. Was it police? As it neared, she thought she saw Caleb. She felt embarrassed, even after she saw it was no one, a stranger passing through. The man lifted his open hand off the wheel, a country greeting, and passed them by. Something locked up inside, and she pulled back, stuffing her fists in her pockets.
"I gotta go now," she said, taking two steps backward.
Manny's eyes blacked over. He breathed low and slow and forced a taut smile.
"Hang on. Can I get a ride to the church? I'll be late if I walk."
Kit saw he was hurt and felt a need to appease him, unclear whether she was protecting his feelings or protecting herself. She nodded and threw the gloves in back. They bounced along in silence for a while, a hot wind rifling their shirts and hair. Kit went slow to keep from stressing the bungees that held up her muffler.
"Who's that fat kid hanging out with Charlie?" Manny asked.
"That'd be Jim Durkin."
Kit wondered how and when he had known they had been spending time together.
"Looks to me like he's moving in on our daughter," he said.
The phrase,
our daughter, bothered Kit. Just yesterday, she had longed for family, had resolved to make things right with Charlie after keeping her in the dark for so long. She thought she could figure out a way to let the girl know her father. But he hadn't earned the right to claim her as his own. Kit was the one who had carried Charlie, birthed her, kept her safe, and fed and schooled when she hadn't even known how to do these things for herself. If he wanted to know Charlie, it would be on Kit's terms. She wanted to back him off, but knew to keep quiet, not to draw out the venom behind his eyes. "Dirk's not so bad," she said. "Not my first choice, I'll admit, but if I put a stop to it, she'll just run toward him." Manny shook his head. "I never thought you'd be so naive." Kit scooped up a pair of pecans from her cup holder and cracked them in her fist. She picked out the brain-like meats, dropping the sharp shells to the wind. "Listen, Charlie's tough. She can look out for herself. Let it be, okay?" She had never been good at telling Manny off. She ate one half of a pecan, green and bitter, and spat it out the window.
"No good?" Manny asked.
"Too young." Manny took the other half for himself and ate it.
"I don't know," he said. "Tastes just right to me."
Kit looked at Manny, his skin creased and seasoned with time, the whole of him still stunning. She knew she should be cautious, but the fetters that bound her to him were stronger than her common sense. She reached across and pushed her fingers through his hair, felt the damp on his scalp, the cool silk of his hair. He tensed beneath her hand, and the back of his neck went red under the copper tan. The space between them sizzled. Needs welled up inside her, pressing out at her breasts, hips. Like always, a sick elixir of hunger and hate. To strike was to seduce. To want was to fear. To love was to hoard. She took her foot off the gas and let the car drift to the shoulder, where it idled and stalled. He tipped back in the seat, unbelieving. Out of breath and insane with anger and wanting him, she clutched the back of his neck and straddled him, pressed her forehead to his, and closed her hands around his throat. She could bite him, rip out his lip with her teeth and chew. She wanted every inch of him pressing into her. His face calm, grateful too, and so beautiful. When the vessels began to burst in the whites of his eyes and his blues went purple, she let go. He coughed and rubbed his neck, turned his weight over on her, and pinned her to the seat.
"I came back for you, kitty cat,"
he rasped, and leaned in and whispered a call into her ear.
"I came back. Even though you left me, I came to find you. You don't belong stuck in this place. These people don't understand you. Tell me this. When did you feel more perfect than you did with me? Fucked up and free."
Tears eked from the corners of his eyes and slipped down those deep creases.
"You've been hollow without me," he said. "Look at you. No one to care for you. No one to touch you. I can see it,"
he said against her neck.
"How hungry you are. I know you want me back. Leave with me. Let's go, let's go."
Kit wanted to slip away. No note, no goodbyes. Like water down a drain, she would just disappear. Under the spell of this invitation, she even forgot about Charlie. She was a nameless runaway, stalking her next meal, waiting for someone to tell her who she was. She was starving, and with him, she would never be hungry again. She closed her eyes and felt something pull her toward him, a beautiful undertow. She lost herself in an eddy of movement and touch. Their bodies slipped into one another, a fusion of similar substances. Lemon drops and the smell of swamp filled the truck, and she was 16 again, then 13, then just born, grasping at the breast, rooting for milk to fill her belly. She could curl up and be fed by him. She would never be alone. Then something, a spring or bare shaft of metal, dug into her spine. She tasted salt and rust, and her skin chilled.
"Easy," Manny said,
and heaved his body against her again, the metal thing gouging her deeper. A probe, unwelcome. An injury.
"I don't want this," she said,
but he pressed on more feverishly, as if he sensed a window closing.
"Get off," she said.
"Okay, all right, I understand,"
he said, pacifying. But his hands were in her hair, his body glued to hers. She was flung back on the bed of that cowboy's truck, cold metal at her spine, and then years before, to a hard motel mattress, more scared of loneliness than of physical harm. His breath hot and damp at her ear. This is not love. She pushed him off, noticing how much stronger she was, how he had lost his advantage over her. Then her feet were on his chest, and she hurled him against the half-open window. She kicked the door latch, and he tumbled into the dust. And before he could get to his feet, she peeled out like the ground was collapsing away. Chapter 33. Manny stood there choking on the dust kicked up by Kit's tires and was catapulted back to the day when he first lost her. He had watched her cut a path in that black Mustang, and even after she disappeared, after the cuffs were clamped to his wrists, he pinned his eyes to the horizon, certain she'd circle back. Then, the years in prison waiting for her to appear, a bashful apology on her lips, perhaps a small, hard tool stowed somewhere indecent where the guards wouldn't look. His careful calm gave way to a bulldozing rage. He squeezed shut his eyes and saw himself torching the town, house by house, field by field, stopping only to watch the blazing figures dance in their yards and listen to their smoke-muffled screams. The specific violence of this fantasy startled even him, as if these thoughts and inclinations had been crocked and fermented in the dark somewhere, waiting for the lid to be lifted. This drive to destroy was so ambitious and true that he wondered if the source was divine. And so he watched and waited for a sign. Since his time in prison, Manny recognized the force of God in him as so powerful, sometimes it overtook him. He needed to siphon its strength to keep it contained, to stay focused. Then, a holy nudge from the darkness. "Deliver me a sacrifice." His iceberg eyes opened and sharpened like picks on a plump mare, nibbling on a fence post and shivering off flies. A horse. His turmoil was now organized by the narrow focus of a predator. With a jealous flare, he remembered the preening stallion Kit had been riding the night he discovered her outside Bible study, the way she'd caressed the length of the horse's body, ears to rump, had held him between her thighs and flown, swiftly away from Manny, just as she had done now. The same horse he'd just seen at the vet's, rolling in a shitty pile of hay. When night fell, Manny returned in darkness to the vet's stable. The buckskin appeared in the window of its stall, ears tilted forward in sudden vigilance, slivers of white around his eyes as he scanned for danger.
"Oh, boy,"
Manny said, and offered a bruised apple to the animal. The horse, torn by the desire for sweetness and the fear of the unknown, took two steps back and stretched out his neck, teeth grasping at the fruit. Manny kept the apple just out of reach until the horse inched close enough. He let the animal eat, juice and pulp running out the loose corners of his mouth, and clutched his halter tight. Then, with a sure swipe of his deer knife, Manny severed the jugular. A hot spray of blood and a scream. The horse reared back his head, the knife embedded in his throat, outraged for a moment, before falling into wide-eyed surrender. In his perfect vulnerability, the dying animal allowed Manny to feel a oneness, a gentle caring. The downy hollow behind his chin, the trickle of snot from his nostril like a child. Grace, Manny thought. Then there was only the gurgling and gush of a waning heartbeat. The horse fell to his knobby knees and stayed there a moment before the full weight of his body threw him sideways and he was dead. He had been a handsome beast, maybe a bit like him, Manny thought, cocky and gorgeous and strong. But with all its swagger and the formidable size of its dick, it was just prey at its core. Organized around fear, those powerful legs made for running fast and far. The side-seeing eyes, the swivelly ears, the bowels that can shit on the move. In the end, there was no fight in that animal. Knife in hand, Manny dipped his blood-sticky arm in the horse trough up to his elbow and swished it around, the green water whirling to brownish red. He splashed water on his face and cleaned his neck and hair, removed his shirt and dunked it, wringing out the blood. Now cleansed, he sheathed the blade in his belt and walked down the road in peace, his brow soft and spirit light, uplifted by the sacrifice. Chapter 34. That night, Kit was in a heavy sleep when she was awoken by the phone ringing. She followed the sound with a hand to the wall and went down the stairs to the kitchen. She did not let herself worry because Charlie was home and well. But she could not imagine that, at this hour, the caller could have good news. She held the receiver to her ear, and Doc spoke.
"You need to come over here, babe," she said. Her voice was thick with sorrow. "Someone's killed my Warbucks."
The horror in Doc's voice jostled Kit out of her thoughts. She jumped into her clothes, whispered goodbye to Charlie, and locked the front door behind her. Doc was sitting on the ground in Warbuck's stall in an area purpled with blood. She lit a pipe of something pungent, its blue wisps wrapped around her in the stillness. Without turning, Doc seemed to know that Kit had arrived.
"I was in bed when it happened," Doc said, dazed and distant. "Lying there a bit drunk on my valerian root vodka, just as I was slipping off into a good sleep. I felt it. My spine twanged with a knowing child, and I could hardly croak out a spell before I heard it."
She crumpled then, a skirt of tears below her eyes.
a gruesome scream. Her hand darted to her throat like a frightened bird. Then, silence. I knew sure as I was born that evil had come and taken the good and left. I lit a candle to light the way for a soul and went outside to see which one of my darlings was dead. Kit was barely breathing as Doc spoke. She recalled the strength, the enormous power of Warbucks beneath her, the thrill of galloping and not knowing or caring about what was ahead of them. She was a poor friend in moments like these, wished she could say one helpful thing. She sat silent in the sawdust next to her friend. The smell of iron from Warbuck's spilt blood was overwhelming. If I had a backhoe, I'd bury him here, Doc said. She pulled a long one off the pipe and spoke as she exhaled, her words muffled. We'll have to call the county to haul him out. They'll sell him to the glue factory, no doubt. Well, ashes to ashes. He's just soft matter now. She reached out to touch the stallion's forelock, but pulled her hand away. I'll dig, Kit said. There was something she could do. Puffy-faced and charmless, Doc turned to Kit. No need. All that's good is gone. His soul fled quick, even before his body died. Something scared him, Kit. Something dark and noxious. A dull, choking feeling, like a child grabbing her by the throat, urged her to cry out. But she held back. Though her legs wanted to run, she stayed put. The realization struck her like a plank, squarely and out of nowhere. That night, the coyotes. The memory was as vivid as the day it happened. She saw them huddled and wiggling, smelled the new rot on their mother. Pulling the trigger was easy. Easy because it was right. She had killed them out of mercy, to spare them the unbearable feeling of being alone in the world before they were ready. She thought he had seen that. In the car the next day, he had said she was special.
We're the same, he had said. We do the hard thing that must be done.
She had understood. A sickly, guilty feeling started in her stomach. She had underestimated how much she had embarrassed him earlier that day, how wronged he would feel. Now, thinking back on the other times she had let him down, the proposal and the day she left him at Stoker's, she was sure this was Manny's work. But what did it mean? Was this some sort of a message? Or a threat? Or was he so hurt he had to take it out on something weaker than he was? Doc must have noticed the look on her face and leaned forward intently. Kit could smell the cocoa butter in her curls.
You know something,
Doc said. Kit paused, unsure how to talk about it or admit that she was indirectly responsible for Warbuck's death. She wanted to tell Doc, but what if she was wrong?
Tell me now, damn it, Doc said, suddenly alive, pink around the neck. Now is no time for your little wounded bird BS. I won't have it. Tell me what you know.
Kit looked down. She wanted to speak, but her lips wouldn't move. Whether out of loyalty or out of fear, she couldn't say the thing she knew. She was unable to name him, to acknowledge how her lives had merged and that it had come to this. She could not claim the past that was surely, mercilessly, catching up to her. The sun had not yet risen by the time Kit made it home, and Charlie was twisted into a pillow, one leg dangling off the bed. Kit hovered at her side for a moment and longed to sleep next to her, absorb her warmth and easy rest, It shouldn't be so hard for a mother to hold her daughter, but it was. She shook Charlie awake.
Get yourself together. We're going to help Doc.
She went over to the closet, pulled down a canvas bag, and tossed it at Charlie.
Might pack a few things just in case she needs us to stay the night.
Jesus, Charlie said, squinting, and covered her eyes. What the hell for?
Kit wasn't prepared to explain herself.
Someone did something awful to Warbucks, she said. She needs us.
Charlie sat up.
Warbucks? Oh my God!
She pulled her arms inside her t-shirt and stretched it over her bent knees, just waking up to what Kit had told her.
What kind of sicko would hurt a horse?
Kit just shook her head, hoping she was wrong about Manny, certain that she wasn't.
Doc must be really messed up about it,
Charlie said, clearly looking for the rest of the story.
But why would we stay over there? Doc doesn't need a babysitter. She's got bigger balls than any man in town.
Kit ignored her, wishing for once Charlie would just go with the flow. She trotted down the stairs and put a few things in a duffel. A flashlight, some ammo, her shotgun. Charlie appeared at the top of the stairs.
You're bringing the gun? She said. This is insane. How about a toothbrush? Why won't you just tell me what the shit is going on? Why do you always act cagey all the time? Maybe you got something to hide.
The fuck do you mean by that?
Kit snapped, climbing the stairs. Her daughter seemed to be trying to connect dots that didn't go, and Kit didn't appreciate the scrutiny in this particular moment. Charlie retreated to her bedroom.
Nothing, I don't know, Charlie mumbled.
She picked her jeans off the floor, sat on the bed, and pulled them over her feet, then jimmied them up to her waist.
Are we talking about something that ain't being said?
Kit asked.
Charlie smoldered. I've been hearing all sorts of things about you.
Kit waited for her to go on. It wouldn't be the first time that people in town had talked about her. But there was a bruised quality to her daughter's voice that worried Kit.
It's garbage, really, Charlie said. Sandy likes to think she knows stuff, but she's a liar. I fucking hate her.
Sandy, Kit said, impatient to get moving.
She cared none too much for Sandy's opinion of her. She took Charlie by the arm.
What did Sandy say? Why are you being so mysterious?
Charlie backed against the wall and shook her head, disbelieving.
Me mysterious? You're mysterious. You're a fucking puzzle wrapped up in chains and padlocked and dropped in the middle of the ocean. Why didn't you tell me about Manny until he came a knocking on our door? I shouldn't have had to wonder who my father was or where you came from or any of it. I should get to take that shit for granted, but I can't. If you were any kind of mother, you'd know that kids shouldn't have to question, did my mom really kidnap me from my dad? Is my mom a criminal? Because that's fucking ridiculous. But that's exactly what's on my mind right now.
Kit let go of her arm, leaving a yellow cuff where her hand had been.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering right now,
Charlie said, her eyes full of tears.
And by the look on your face, maybe I don't have to wonder anymore.
Kit felt her guts collapse. She shuffled words around, searching for a way to explain. How could she tell Charlie any of it?
I didn't kidnap you, exactly, she said.
This seemed to make Charlie even more angry.
Exactly? Roughly, then? You basically sort of kind of kidnapped me, but not exactly.
You were mine.
Kit reached for her. Charlie dodged.
Yours? I'm not property. Yours or anyone's. You can't just cheat me out of having a father. I don't care why you did it.
That's not what I meant. I thought I was doing the right thing.
Kit could see that Charlie was trying to understand, but she couldn't figure out a way to connect. It was as if Kit were on a rope, swinging toward and away from her daughter, and she couldn't stop the motion. All she could do was hang on.
Manny's been here for 2 weeks and the whole town loves him. We've been here since I was born, and what do we have to show for it? You're the town nut, and I'm the town nut's freak daughter. My life is so messed up. Because of you, no one wants to come near me.
Charlie started to cry into her hands.
Maybe you want to be alone, she said, but I don't.
What really hurt was that Kit knew her daughter was right. She had always wished for more for Charlie. Friends, hobbies, family, a proper childhood. But Kit always got in the way. She was guilty, and she should make it right. Maybe all she needed to do was go to Charlie, hold her, tell her everything would be okay. Red's words from long ago came to her like a commandment. Be there for her little spirit. But how was she supposed to start being a different person all of a sudden? She didn't know how to make Charlie feel better, or give her advice, or listen to her feelings. She couldn't tell her about the doctor in the trailer, or the day she came running into Pecan Hollow. There wasn't a way to make any of this right. All she could do was keep her daughter safe. Kit pinned Charlie's wrist behind her back. Maybe you're right, Kit said, as cool as she could. Maybe I'm terrible and everything's fucked, but right now, you're coming with me. Charlie broke away and tried to throw the bedroom door between her and Kit. Kit wedged herself in the jam and pushed her way back in. She took Charlie by the waist, flipped her upside down over her shoulder, and carried her down the stairs.
Let go of me! Let go!
Charlie screamed too close to Kit's ear. Kit clenched her teeth and kept a hold of Charlie's thrashing legs. Charlie gripped the banister and nearly toppled them both, but Kit managed to jerk loose and bring them safely to the truck. She opened the passenger door with her free hand, dumped Charlie in the truck, and slammed the door behind her. At least Charlie knew when to stop fighting. She stayed sullen all the way to Doc's. Even though little had been resolved, she had said more to her mother than ever before. Now that it was out, all she could do was wait to see what Kit would do. Charlie was afraid of the most likely outcome, that her mom would do nothing. She was so absorbed in thinking about the dust-up with Kit that she hadn't prepared herself for the scene at Doc's. When she saw what had happened, the ragged second mouth under Warbuck's jaw, the sticky lake of blood, she was nearly sick. Kit hosed away the gore while Doc curried the stallion's coat. When they finished, Charlie helped dry him with towels, then cover him with a large tarp to keep the bugs off him. County came by with a flatbed and a crane and dragged the body slowly up the ramp and onto the truck. Doc cried into a hanky, said a prayer, and kissed him on the muzzle before they hauled him off. Charlie took up chores without being asked, eager to have something to do, to feel that she was being helpful. Hardly anyone spoke a word until dinner. A thick gumbo of chicken and venison sausage simmered on the stove, filling the room with steam and spice. Kit, detached and brooding, pumped great scalding spoonfuls of the stew into her mouth. Doc cleared her throat to puncture the silence. Charlie was exhausted and hungry, but couldn't bring herself to eat meat today. Not after sending Warbucks to become dog food.
What's the plan exactly? Charlie said. Why are we really staying here?
From a glass bottle, Doc sipped some peaty spirit, then tucked it away in the pocket of her overalls. She heaved herself up and shuffled around the table, gathering the dishes. She must have known better than to jump between fighting dogs. Kit looked at Charlie, but did not answer. Charlie wanted to pluck out Kit's eyes and squash them. She shoved the table toward her mom, got up, and left through the kitchen door. Outside, the air still smelled of warm dirt and manure. She turned over a feed bucket and sat, smoldering like an ember in a haystack. Damn that crazy bitch to hell! She flicked the loose edge of a scab on her elbow and thought about Manny. How closely he listened to her. How interested he was. How he was smart. Like smarter than the whole town put together. And she wondered what it would be like if she could have grown up with him instead of Kit. Or what they could have been like as a family. When he first came around, she'd made a secret wish that Kit would fall for him. She got the feeling that Kit was into him, even before she knew who he was. Now that Kit was acting more and more deranged, Charlie just wished he could take her away, from her mom, from Dirk and Sandy and Lee Prentice, from the whole goddamn town and every backward idiot in it. From a cluster of shrubs, she heard a slight, stealthy noise, the sound of someone trying to be quiet. At first, she froze, listening and scanning the dim arena. A duet of June bugs hurled themselves at the light by the kitchen door. After a moment, she heard the sound again, whatever it was, moving more boldly. She picked up a dusty horseshoe from a bucket near her feet and backed up to the wall of the barn, waiting. She could call for help if she needed to, but she didn't want to draw attention just yet. There was more sulking to do. A form appeared, a sinister face. She chucked the U-shaped weapon reflexively, poorly, a couple of yards from its target. A creature, fat and furry, scurried into the faint light cast from the kitchen and hissed. A possum, toothy and smiling like a demon. She threw another horseshoe at it, aiming carefully, this one just glancing off the hump of the creature's back. The possum stiffened and fell to the ground. Charlie felt a vice grip on the back of her neck. "Stop that, you!" Doc said. Charlie slouched away and rubbed the sore spot. "What's the big deal?" she said. "You can't punish an innocent animal just because you're quarreling with your mama," Doc said, and marched her over to where the animal lay, curled, mouth agape. "It's low character." "Oh, please," Charlie said, a little stung by Doc's reprimand. "Possums are devils. They're pests. You should have let me kill it." "You don't mean that, Sha," Doc said, and waved her arms around Charlie as if clearing the air of stink. "You've got the wrong idea about them. Possums are more than that, don't you know?" She squatted and stroked the possum from head to tail. "They're shy creatures, never harmed a single human being. And they're scavengers, you know? Nature's sanitation workers. But they're better than buzzards at cleaning carcasses because possums, they eat the bones. I think people take one look at them and think they're evil just because they're ugly. What would that make me then?" She wheezed a laugh and slapped Charlie on the back. Charlie looked at the house and saw her mom cleaning, her crazy-ass haircut, that jagged fringe in the middle of her forehead, like a kid had found a sharp set of scissors, and all those battle scars. Charlie was both determined to distinguish herself as nothing like her mother, and deeply troubled by their sameness. "You know the best thing about possums?" Doc asked. "They take care of their young." Charlie considered this and nudged the animal with her boot. "Why do they just freeze up like that?" "Look here and listen.
all God's little critters do something different when a threat comes upon them. Some fight. The ones with the long claws and teeth. Your big felines and your canines. Some of them, like horses, they run away.
Doc leaned down and pressed her ear to the possum's belly. Charlie swayed back, as if the animal would spring to life any moment. Doc pulled Charlie by the hand.
Listen to the heartbeat, see?
Charlie knelt and put her ear to the fur, softer than she had expected. The heart pumped at less than a beat per second.
It's not pretending. This creature is preparing to die. The brain shuts off all their feelings and they go to sleep so that if they get eaten, they don't feel the teeth sinking into them. Good thing is predators don't usually like dead meat, so they pass on by. Isn't it beautiful? Nature is forgiving, always looking out for us, always finding a way to do the best thing.
Charlie looked at the empty stall and felt sad for Doc.
I'm sorry about Warbucks.
Doc took a cleansing breath. She squeezed Charlie on the neck again, gently this time, and went inside. An hour after lights out, Charlie could hear the long, slow breaths of deep sleep. Doc snored laboriously on her bed. Kit was coiled on top of the sleeping bag next to hers, the shotgun inches from an outstretched hand. Charlie thought of her parents like Manny had described, young and tearing around Texas in his Mustang. It hurt her to think of Kit like that, like she had missed out on the fun, on all the best parts of her mother. It seemed like Manny could slice the world down its middle and open it up to her, whereas Kit had only made it smaller. The embers in her chest had cooled, but Charlie had made up her mind. She had to know what it was like to be with her dad, and she didn't see how she could do it with Kit around. Kit would come after her, and she'd be mad. She remembered what Dirk had said, how Kit had busted into the trailer looking for Charlie with murder in her eyes. She picked up the gun, lifted it slowly by its slim, oily barrel, careful not to brush Kit with the strap. It was heavy in her hand, unwieldy, but when she hung it on one shoulder, she felt strong. Charlie crossed the room to leave, wincing with every creak of the floorboards, but no one stirred. She lowered herself down the steep stairs from the loft to the ground floor. About halfway, she lost her footing and slid down three steps before she caught herself. Kit called out her name, and Charlie's stomach flopped.
"Are you okay?" Kit asked.
Charlie wrestled with her breath as her heart pounded.
"I'm going to take a dump, jeez."
She went downstairs, stayed in the bathroom a long time, and washed her hands in case her mom was still up. Then she stood at the base of the stairs and listened. When she was convinced her mom and Doc were both asleep, she found her shoes by the front door and slipped quietly away. As she approached the front gate, an inconvenient memory surfaced. Not a memory exactly, but the sensation of crawling into bed with Kit in the middle of the night. Though fully asleep, Kit would shift to make room for Charlie. How perfectly warm she felt tucked into the little harbor of her mother's side-lying lap. Tears slid down her cheeks and hung suspended from her jaw. It wasn't enough, merely to remember. She had to see what it would be like not to be disappointed all the time. She wiped her face dry and turned left away from town. The first day Manny had come to visit, he had told Kit he was staying at the Big Sky Motel, and she was pretty sure she knew the one. It would take over an hour, she guessed, to make it there on foot.